Welcome to The Whole Marketer, where we look at the holistic skills, the technical skills, soft skills, leadership skills, and personal understanding that marketers of today need to grow the brands and businesses of tomorrow. We're here to ensure that marketers feel supported and empowered to have successful and fulfilling careers and lives as a whole. Hello, and welcome to The Whole Marketer podcast. This episode is brought to you by Sticky Beak. I'm an advocate for consumer and customers being at the heart of our decision making. And our sponsors of today's episode can help you do just that. Sticky Beak is a platform that marketers have been dreaming of. Rapid global consumer testing to give you affordable, real-time feedback on all of your marketing activation, so you know what consumers think before you go to market and to get that all-important buy-in. Say goodbye to endless discussions and hello to faster, better decisions. Visit stickybeak.co/thewholemarketer to see how Sticky Beak are changing the way marketers work. Today's podcast is on challenger brands, and we'll be discussing this technical skill along with the behaviours and skills that marketers need to have who work on challenger brands. Shortly, I'll welcome today's guest, Kirtu, onto the podcast. But before I do, let me tell you a little bit more about challenger brands. Challenger brands are brands that enter into established categories or even create new categories by displacing established legacy brands, whether created by a corporate, adding a challenger brand to their portfolio, or a founder-led startups. They have identified a customer or consumer need that is not being satisfied by the category. This often results in disruption to the category norms. However, developing and growing a challenger brand comes with its own set of challenges. See what I did there? Rapid growth, increased focus on cash flow, and not just profit, with often less available marketing investment, but often also comes with benefits, less complex decision-making, the ability to be more responsive to your customers' needs, often more focus on purpose, often more connected to those consumers and communities in which they are part of, and often provides opportunities to be creative, entrepreneurial, and much more. Who better to talk to us than today's guest, Kirtu from Lucky Saint? Lucky Saint is a personal favourite brand of mine, and I was delighted to see them win Brand of the Year at the Marketing Society Awards. Kirtu Inkeroinen is Marketing and E-Commerce Director of Lucky Saint, the UK's number one dedicated alcohol-free brand and Brand of the Year 2023. Kirtu has worked in consumer goods for over 18 years, starting her career working with household name brands such as Kimberly-Clark, Kleenex, Andrex and Huggies, before moving on to journey through the drink sector. From the FMCG giant, the Coca-Cola Company, leaping into the world of scale-up at Union Hand Roasted Coffee, before joining Lucky Saint in 2022. She was selected as one of the Marketing Week's top 100 most effective marketers in 2023 and is a judge for Marketing Week, the Drum and IPA Effectiveness Awards. As mentioned earlier, Lucky Saint won the Brand of the Year by the Marketing Society in 2023, as well as the Grocer Drinks Brand of the Year. And I'm excited to hear more about the journey that they've been on to win such awards. Kirtu, welcome to the Whole Marketer podcast.
Thanks very much, and good morning.
Good morning. So as you know, as an avid listener, we always start with a big, juicy question. And today's big, juicy question is, what is a challenger brand to you?
So I think of it as being a David Goliath. So whether it is a more established brand, or whether it is a category or perceptions that you are going up against. I think often it is sort of a startup, scale-up business or brand, but not always. So, for example, when I worked at Coca-Cola, I started my career there as the Powerade Sports Drink brand manager during the London Olympics. And Powerade Sports Drinks in their portfolio is very much a challenger brand to Lucozade Sport. So it can also be sort of a brand in a portfolio of a bigger business. But I think really it's about that mindset of going against something more established. And for Lucky Saint, for us, it's about challenging the notion that alcohol-free is a less than variant of the real thing and sort of a secondary variant. So we are very much alcohol-free only. So showcasing that you can be aspirational brand, great tasting product on its own right and not the 0% version of something else.
And I really like that part in your definition where you talk about the perceptions that you're going to need to challenge as well as the players in that category or in that marketplace that you're entering. And it feels like that's a challenge that you have with Lucky Saint, with the perceptions that alcohol-free can taste just as good, if not better, in my opinion, than the alcohol options.
Yes, absolutely. So I think there's been disservice done to the category in the past when maybe the products weren't where they are nowadays. So there's a lot of people who tried alcohol-free some years ago and not had the experience that they've enjoyed. So taste is still the number one barrier to entry in the category. So that's why we're really focusing on that proud to be aspirational drink, great tasting in its own right. But a lot of it is also around, I mean, moderation is on the rise. And there's actually some amazing stats, like 1 in 3 pub visits are now alcohol free. And more people are moderating their alcohol intake. But there is still this feeling that you feel like you need to explain yourself when you are drinking alcohol free or not joining in the rounds. So there's a lot that we focus on making alcohol free a proud acceptable choice and changing those societal perceptions. And one of the key focuses we've got as a business and a brand is availability on draft. If you think of the British pub culture, it's very much about joining in on the rounds. And I think there's a difference psychologically on whether you are buying a round where everybody else is having a pint, you are having a Coke versus being able to have alcohol-free beer in a pint as well and really joining in that social occasion. And our big belief as a brand is that the greatest reward of drinking is the social connection, not the alcohol. So it's really about offering people that choice and belonging in the moment, whether they drink alcohol or not.
So you've got a lot of perceptual changes from others that have entered into the category, as well as perception of that social cultural moment that you need to break into and that kind of acceptance of the round. And many marketeers know that often with challenger brands, even if you are, as you've described earlier, working in a larger organization, come with reduced budget or come with really having to have that David and Goliath mindset. So your stone has got to almost be denser, even though it didn't cost you as much to fight Goliath. What is it do you see as, you know, marketing director working on a challenger brand with a reduced budget? What would be the key recommendation to other marketeers that are in a similar situation?
So I always would start by thinking about your tools as wider than just your marketing budget. So really looking at it at a wide perspective. So for example, starting with things like making sure that your brilliant basics are in place. So packaging. So in my role at Union Hand Roasted Coffee, for example, instead of spending any money on media or brand communication, we really overinvested in the packaging. So where coffee is mainly sold in flexible foil packs that don't look that premium, we overinvested in this beautiful pack with craft paper, a cardboard box, copper foiling, a tin tie around the pack, and really made it look the part to justify the price premium. So almost double everything else on shelf and grocery supermarkets. And that was sort of a conscious choice to invest in that from the marketing budget, which really served us well in terms of then the distribution, rate of sale, premium on shelf. And a second would be to looking at your team structure. So for example, at Lucky Saint, we've invested in the creative team. So we've got 2-person internal creative team, which for brand that's 5 years old, about 60 people in total, is a big investment. But we believe that that helps us be really agile. Premium creative is at the heart of the brand, so it really helps us play into that strength. And also another example would be this year I've taken some of the brand budget and invested in customer care tools to make sure that our customer care for our D2C customers is the best possible experience that they can get. So really looking at it widely. And actually, one of the master strokes, which I can't take any credit for, I think we've done is to open our own pub. So this was thanks to the vision of our founder, Lou, who was looking for office space for us. And then that office space idea spiraled into owning our own pub. So we opened our pub, The Lucky Saint, in Marylebone a year ago. And that's been, it's actually a revenue driver for us, but it's also a brilliant brand touch point. So it's enabling us to really execute the brand visibility, getting consumers there. So we do a lot of run clubs, cycling clubs from the pub. So it's thinking about your budget really broadly and making sure that your basics are in place before you start thinking about any media investment. And the second one would be, I'm a huge believer in consistency in brand building. And that's probably my legacy from having worked on a Coca-Cola brand. And I think actually when you are a small brand with smaller budgets, that can actually be easier. Because reality is that you won't have the budget necessarily every year to shoot or produce new sets and campaigns. So it's about overinvesting in the first place to create something beautiful and then making sure that you keep consistent, keep on using it, finding new channels and new ways to bring it to life to consumers and not giving into that marketer's fatigue of thinking, oh, we've done this already once, everybody's already seen it. In reality, I do think marketers always get bored of the work before any consumers do. So it's making sure that you sweat your assets as much as you can. So those would be my main key tips. And I think finally, also on the measurement side, one thing I find harder on a smaller budget and smaller brand is to measure your activity, because you won't necessarily have the budget to invest in proper econometric studies. And actually, sometimes you're not spending enough for that to show. But I do think it's key to, whenever you invest money, to find some ways to gauge the success and a pre-measurement, so you know you can evaluate quickly whether you need to be changing what you're doing or doubling down on things that work. And you can be quite scrappy sometimes with your measurements. So one of the best things we've actually done as a team is to do old-fashioned consumer calls. So picking up the phone and calling our customers and talking to them direct. So not the budget investment, it's time investment. But you can also look at getting some feedback from the market in a simpler way.
I couldn't agree more. I always say that when people say, oh, well, we haven't got huge research budgets, it's like there's so much you can do. Secondary, collecting your own internal data, as you said, picking up the phone, interacting with others that are interacting with the brand, getting verbatim feedback. There is a lot that you can still gather, even if you haven't got formal measurement data collection in place.
Yes, I think even trawling through your Trustpilot reviews and your customer care feedback, looking at what people are saying on social media, I think sampling and events when you're speaking to consumers there, getting the first-hand feedback, there's a lot that's going to be done. One of the things to watch out, I would say, on measuring is, in smaller brands as well, is not to fall into a trap on just looking at easy to find measurements at the last click, but also to make sure that you find ways to look at that longer term brand investment and how that's working for you, and trying to fight for some budget for the long term brand investment as well, even if it's 20% of your budget versus everything going into that instant sales driving channels.
Definitely. And as you said earlier, you know, sweating those production assets once you have created them, even if the marketeer gets bored before the consumer does, which is a really great quote.
In our marketing team, we use the mantra fresh consistency. So we've got amazing key assets shot by Rankin and Sunli, these beautiful images, and we refresh them campaign after campaign with new copy lines and taking them to new channels, but keeping consistency and making sure that we make the most of them is sort of at the heart of it.
I love that. And I've noticed that actually from the outdoor that I've seen on your brand, the consistency that happens at New Year, but then also again throughout the year. And it is embedding memory structures, even if it's just with me in straw poll of one, I'm sure it's not.
Brilliant.
So you've given us some great tips about where you focus as a challenger brand with a reduced budget. What do you think are the key challenges for marketeers as a professional when working on challenger brands?
Yes, so I think the basics of marketing rules and theory don't really change whether you work on legacy brands or challenger brands. It comes harder when you're trying to gain your share of voice or trying to get your message out there when you can't really outspend your competition. So that is the obvious challenge. But then I think the other big thing is usually the culture and the pace of the business, and the risk appetite can be quite different. often challenger brands, you are more looking at doubling your sales year on year rather than looking at 5% growth. So that sets a very different culture and pace and learning rate, decision-making pace. And that can, I think, either feel exciting or it can feel exhausting based on how you like to work. And I think it was the risk appetite. So in a more established brands and businesses, you have a lot of learnings already. Some of the bets can be safer. In a smaller business, the portion of your investment in marketing versus your revenue, what it means for your cash flow and your total business is the sales don't come in, can be much more significant. So you need to be able to live with the risks and take those risks. And then finally, being able to live in the world where you have less structure. So working legacy brand like Coca-Cola, where you have over 100 years of brand building, brand positioning, brand DNA is very clear. So it's very different than working in a younger brand where sometimes the brand is the thing that's in the founder's head and it's not quite formed yet. And you need to be able to pull that out and codify and have a think about on how does your brand live in new worlds it hasn't gone to yet. So for example, at the moment we are thinking about how does Lucky Saint live in a Sonic world or in a video world? So it's being able to live in that less structured world, which can be either exciting or it can be daunting. So that's, I think, the big difference in culture-wise, working in a more established versus a challenger brand world.
That's not dissimilar to what I've heard others that have said that have moved from kind of a bigger brand, did you say, with legacy brands into a challenger brand and, you know, less structure, less sometimes rigor, because as you mentioned earlier, the lack of investment behind kind of data and insight and being able to take risks based on what you do know and move a lot quicker. And also what you mentioned there around almost taking what's in the founder's brain and extracting it to form an official brand positioning that you can then use, you know, in the marketplace with your marketing team, with your creative team and bringing plans to life can also be a challenge. And I've also heard challenges very much around the passion level and the emotional attachment to those thoughts as well can also be quite a tension point.
Yeah, so that can also be a great thing. So when you are debating your brand with the founder who's really passionate about it and the rest of the business and teams who are really passionate about what they're creating, it can make for more challenging, but actually also more fruitful debates and discussion. And it's exciting because you're creating something new.
And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about the human skills, as well as the technical skills, of course, that a marketer will need to work in these environments. I'm thinking about acting with pace and an entrepreneurial mindset. I'm thinking about commercial acumen. I'm thinking about being a good listener. I'm thinking about being able to have agility and flexibility in their thinking. What skills do you believe marketers working in this environment need to possess from a holistic perspective?
I think one of the key skills is resilience and being able to pivot quickly in uncertain times. And then also being able to take quite unstructured areas and issues and challenges and try to create something simplified that the whole business can get behind. Again, often in smaller businesses, not everybody always speaks the language of marketing, versus if you are working in a larger business, again, like Coca-Cola, Kimberly-Clark, from my background, where everybody understands the language of marketing, the power of marketing, the general rules of marketing. In smaller businesses, that's not always the case. So you will need to be the one educating the business and directing the business and making sure that you can, you know, convey the thinking in a simple, compelling way to the rest of the business.
That makes sense. So instead of a long strategy document, it's almost like synthesizing those thoughts into clarity really quickly that everyone can get behind. And more importantly, not in traditional marketing speak, but how that relates to the cash flow, to the commercials within the business.
Yes, so I've had to simplify my marketing documents and strategy documents quite a lot and take away all of the acronyms and other theoretical models. And that's actually been quite nice. So suddenly your marketing strategy document is 2 pages long versus 20 pages. And then your investment, as you were saying, really understanding what those levels of investment mean for the business in the wider sense and not just in your brand budget sense.
Definitely. So your 2 pages long brand strategy, is working quite evidently because you recently won Brand of the Year at the Marketing Society Awards. Tell us more why you believe you won.
So I still can't quite believe we won it.
I can, Kirtu, I can.
Thank you. But I think one of the key reasons probably was that people do like rooting for the underdog. And I think that is one of the assets that Challenger Pranks have in their arsenal. So we were, for context, up against global brands like McDonald's, British Airways. And I think we were the one smaller challenger brand in that lineup, which I think sort of captured people's imagination. And then we had last year our first big campaign moment, really. So we ran a campaign in January, so tapping into the dry January consumer moment. We partnered with Alcohol Change UK, leveraging their credibility as being the official beer of dry January. And we ran a campaign that was based on the insight that January is this moment of temptation for people who want to moderate, but there's temptation everywhere. And Lucky Saint is your savior. And we ran that across out of home, but we also did social, digital, PR, sampling. So I think for the first time ever, we run this whole through the line campaign that then looked different to maybe what was out there in the market otherwise and captured people's imagination. And I think the category is having a moment as well in terms of moderation, and that's on top of people's minds.
So we love the underdog. You've done your first through the line campaign with multiple touch points. Tell me more about kind of the successes that you also achieved from that campaign.
So I think one of the big things that came out of that campaign was the belief that we got from our trade customers on the back of it. So really step changing our distribution across on and off trade, showing that we are a credible brand and we are starting to get to a size where consumers are starting to notice. And our brand awareness, especially in London, really stepped up on the back of that campaign. So we've seen that translate into sales strongly as well. So that felt like it gave us this sort of momentum snowball moment at the start of the year that's been keeping on going. And then after that, we continued. So we launched the pub after that last year. We've also gone international. We launched a second product, IPA, in December. So we've had this full momentum year of new news on the back of it. That's been continuing.
What's really clear as I'm listening to you is the level and pace of expansion. Another category, IPA, going into other global markets, increasing routes to market with the work that you're doing with the on-trade and also with into grocery. The expansion and pace is significant.
Definitely. That's the either the good or the bad in challenger brands. So it can be really exciting. I personally find it really exciting. There's always something new to learn. You never rest on your laurels. But yes, there's no peaceful moment where you sort of have your handbook all written out and you know what you're going to do for the next 2 years.
And how do you find leading a brand that is expanding at such a rapid rate, making sure that you stay true to the brand at its core?
So I think one of the really helpful things for me is that our founder, Luke, actually has a very strong vision for the brand and the business and where we go. So our vision is to inspire the world to drink better, and we want to become the world's defining alcohol-free brand. So we've got our basics and where we want to go quite clearly. And then it's easier to find your way through that when you have your end goal quite clearly in mind. And often there's the balance between the everyday hustle and all of the things that you could be doing versus then simplifying your approach and making sure that you're really placing those big bets. And I think what I call the Chanel approach, I think, which was look into a mirror before you go out and take off one thing, which I think also applies in marketing. So sometimes simpler is better. So if things start to get too complicated and it's hard to explain your plan to people, then simplify and take it down a notch. So clear end goal in mind and then not overcomplicating your marketing plans.
There's some really great lessons that you've learned there at Lucky Saint around simpler is better and having that clear and concise goal and the mirror technique. I'd love to hear about your other lessons learned. Kirtu, what are your career highs and lows?
So for the lows, I can't think of one specific moment, but when I'm feeling at my lowest, when I'm really doubting myself, is when I'm struggling with seeing clarity on big decisions. So, you know, those moments when you have some major decisions to be made and you can't quite see the wood from the trees and you're struggling with those moments and then you are starting to doubt your skills. So those always feel the lowest. And I think I found just ways to cope around it, which is mainly talking to other people and knowing that everybody goes through them and also going for long runs, which will clear my head. Often those are the moments when I feel at my lowest. And in terms of career highs, I will have to say the winning the brand of the year, because it was so unexpected. And I think it was such an amazing moment for the whole of the business and validation for our work and for our marketing team. And I will always remember we were at the awards evening, and you only know in that moment in the evening whether you won or not. And there's a live count. It was a very exciting evening, and I was there with Luke, the founder, and I was looking at the other nominees, and I said to Luke, listen, just to manage your expectations, I do not think we have a chance of winning. We are here up against like McDonald's, Race to Arches, and some of other amazing campaigns, Calm, the mental health charity. And I said, we should just be really proud that we've been nominated here along those other brands. And then having that moment of winning was something I'll definitely always remember.
And what a moment. I was so happy when I saw that you had all won that award, because as I was mentioning offline before the podcast started, I feel like I've been with you since the beginning of the journey. Well, at least when Emma joined Luke on the quest to expand Lucky Saint as a brand. And here we are, I think we said probably 3 years later since when Emma joined, who was, I think, the third episode that we recorded. And here we are at 100 and something. And it's lovely to see the expansion and the growth, and to see a marketeer also in role within that brand, and to see the successes that you've had, not only had, but also be recognized by the industry. So a personal well done from me.
Oh, thank you so much. And yeah, it's been such a proud moment for me, but also for the whole of the team on what everybody's been achieving over the years.
So you've given us so much great advice throughout today's podcast already. The challenges with challenger brands. There's a joke in there somewhere, I'm sure. How you do that with a reduced budget, you know, really thinking about what skills a marketeer needs to have working on a challenger brand, and talking around why you believe you've won brand of the year. But I still have to ask you the final question, which is, what one piece of advice would you give to marketers of tomorrow?
So I'm going to share the advice that my dad actually gave me, which is probably the best piece of career advice I've ever gotten. And this was when I was with Coca-Cola, so with very established local brand, clear career path. And I was considering taking this role with Union Hand Roasted Coffee, which was small coffee roast most people hadn't ever heard of. Going into a marketing team of one, wasn't even distributed in grocery or in the consumer markets. And it seemed like an odd choice for many. But I had a call with my dad to get his advice on the decision. And I probably expected he would say, take the more certain choice. But he actually said, think about where are you going to learn the most, that you've still got, you know, 20, 30 years of your career left. What is the role and the business where you're going to learn the most? And therefore, I took that leap and certainly learned a lot over the following years. So I think in terms of thinking about your career choices, not always going for the title changes or the prestige or even the salary if you can, but to choose the businesses, positions and people where you're going to learn the most. And that way make for a very interesting and fulfilling career.
Love that. Where you're going to learn the most, and not going after what I call the director of the universe titles. Great piece of advice. And Kirti, thank you so much for your time on today's podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning into the Whole Marketer podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do like, follow and share. The Whole Marketer is here to support and empower you and your teams with the latest technical skills, soft and leadership skills and behaviours, and personal understanding for a successful, fulfilling marketing career and life as a whole. For support, resources and more information on how we can help you to become a Whole Marketer and build whole marketing teams, go to www.thewholemarketer.com.